Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritis. Today is Friday, October 16th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Today's podcast is just going to be a weekly wrap-up. So some market performance, a little bit of news from Boeing, a little bit of a recap of the Trump-Biden town hall yesterday. Of course, those were separate town halls as we discussed yesterday. What might take place next week if they're in-person, again, debate should take place. That should have been the third debate with both Trump and Biden together, but this will be the second, perhaps. I do imagine it will take place. An update with how many votes have already been cast thus far in early voting. I was asked a question from a listener, so I want to go through that in regards to negative interest rates and precious metals. So I do want to talk about that as well. A recap of yesterday's initial claims figures, and then some further news about debts and deficits, just to recap, because that's what we like to do here. Now, first is some market performance. We have the dollar index down a little bit today, but still at a 93 handle. Closed for the day at 93.708. So we're still in a little bit of a wait-and-see mode here with respect to how the dollar is going to behave. Should we continue to see strength in the dollar index? It's quite possible that that will be coupled with a sell-off in the equity space. That is not what President Trump would want to see only a couple weeks out from Election Day. So I imagine that if that is the case, should we witness an increase in the dollar index, which brings down equity prices, that Donald Trump and company will throw everything at the kitchen sink to weaken the dollar and to pump the stock market as high as humanly possible over the coming few weeks. But nonetheless, there are a lot of competing forces out there from the macro perspective of what's going on globally. And we'll get into that further when we talk about negative interest rates with respect to that audience member's question. On the index front today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up about 0.4%. The S&P 500 was flat, and the NASDAQ 100 closed down about 0.4%. Yesterday, there was a big sell-off in Europe. Well, a huge reversal. A big up day across the pond in Europe. UK markets gaining back 1.5%. Germany gaining back 1.6%. French markets regaining 2%. Italian markets gaining 1.7% back. And rounding it out with the Spanish markets, they gained about 0.5%. So yesterday, a big sell-off because of the COVID-19 surge. And what are we going to do? Are we going to shut down again? This, that, and the other. Well, today, I guess everything is perfectly okay. These markets are unhinged, and that is extremely problematic. And I think this is going to get much worse before it gets better. We have never seen so much central planning and central control or attempts at control ever on this type of scale globally. This is going to have huge negative consequences. As I see it, I, of course, could be wrong, but I think that if I am wrong, then what that would mean is that these central bankers, in conjunction with federal governments the world over, have solved the riddle. They have discovered, or perhaps created, the free lunch. I don't believe that's the case, but maybe I'm wrong. So maybe that's the case. And if that is the case, that all of this money printing and all of this spending of money that people do not have, it's consequence-free, no negative side effects. Well, then, these central banks can print everybody off $1 million. I would imagine that would clean up most people's balance sheets, wipe away all your debts, have a nice cash position, go buy some property, what have you, and live happily ever after. And if you should get reckless or get carried away, no worries, because we have discovered or created the free lunch. So just go to your respective central bank, print off some currency, and go right back to doing what you were doing before. No side effects, no negative consequences whatsoever. Don't have to pay taxes either, because the central banks can just print the money. Again, I don't think that's going to work out, but that's what they're telling us. If you take it to its logical end, that's the scenario. But nobody has ever asked this question. This type of discussion is never brought up. It's most likely not going to be brought up next week in the Trump-Biden debate, because we already have a little bit of a preview as to the topics that are going to be brought up, because I think it's Kristen or Welker of NBC News, if I'm not mistaken, is going to be the moderator or attempt to moderate this thing next week. And I guess the topics are going to be something like American families, climate change, COVID-19, racial justice. That's it, I guess. Fantastic. Where's the economy and all of that? Unless they're going to, you know, weave it in somehow. Maybe that'll be the American family segment. I don't know. But these serious questions have not been brought up, and they're not going to be brought up, because the two-party system wants to keep you distracted. Divide and conquer. Let's dangle something shiny in front of the people, and then in the background, yet still well in front of everybody's face, we're going to run away with all the money. Because that's exactly what's going on. It's quite unbelievable, but that's what they're getting away with. On the commodity front, crude oil is closed at $40.88 for the week. Brent is closed at $42.81 a barrel. Natural gas down a little bit today, trading at $2.69. Gold traded a little bit lower for the day as well, $1,898 an ounce. That's spot gold. And spot silver is at $24.17. And then to round it out, Uncle Sam's 10-year Treasury junk note, spot 7.5%. That is up for the day, so a little bit of selling in the bond market to get those yields higher. Something to be mindful of as well. So, first to the audience member's question with respect to the ECB, perhaps adopting negative interest rates. And if that's the case, would that put downward pressure on the euro, thereby putting upward pressure on the dollar index, thereby putting downward pressure on precious metals? That is a very logical statement, and that could be how that plays out. I still believe that precious metals, regardless of what happens with the dollar, long-term is going up. Can there be some short-term volatility, short-term weakness with respect to precious metals? Of course. And I look at any type of weakness in the precious metal space as a buying opportunity, because this is a race to the bottom. Nobody wins with respect to what these central banks and federal governments are doing to their respective currencies. The other thing that you have to look for with precious metals, it's not just, or any commodity for that matter, that is traded in US dollars. It's not just the price or the value of the US dollar or the dollar index. It's also the supply and demand of that particular commodity in question, whether that's a barrel of oil, whether that's natural gas, whether that's the price of wheat or corn or soybeans or iron ore, or gold or silver. You still have those supply and demand dynamics and fundamentals that you still have to gauge. We know that because of COVID-19, a lot of mining operations have been shut down. So that has put downward pressure on supply. They're not mining it out of the earth, so there's not a lot of gold coming out. And of course, silver is a byproduct of a lot of other mining operations. We're not witnessing that. So from that supply standpoint, it's lower supply. And if you're looking to buy physical silver, which I think you should be looking into, you're going to see still some pretty big spreads between the spot price of silver and what you're going to be paying for it physically. And to me, that represents demand that is out there for physical silver, especially for a backing or a substitute for the funny money in your pocket, because gold and silver is real money. It has been for millennia. So it makes me laugh every once in a while when I hear an analyst or somebody bring up the topic of, oh yeah, you know, the dollar's going to lose reserve status, or it's going to tank and this, that, and the other. Say, well, how could that be? Because the dollar's the best looking girl at the dance. Where else are you going to go? Look at what's happening in Europe. Are the people going to trust China? Are you going to put it in the Japanese yen? Swiss franc? The Aussie? The Canadian dollar? I mean, where else are you going to go? And I chuckle. What about gold? This isn't even on anybody's radar for the most part, which is why this can be such an opportunity. The other thing that you have to look into, obviously, and we discuss this all the time with respect to precious metals, is negative rates. Real negative rates. So, the European Union, the ECB, I should say, they have a few different rates that they manipulate and attempt to control, okay? A couple of them are near the zero bound, and one of them, the deposit rate, I believe, is actually nominally negative at about 50 basis points, okay? As central banks continue to lower their interest rates, and as they continue to expand their balance sheets and their money supply, which by definition is inflation, an increase in the money supply, that is the fuel for gold and silver prices and other precious metals. Period. End. That's the end of the story right there. Then you take into consideration the supply and demand dynamics. And then, of course, yes, you are going to take into consideration to some degree the strength or the weakness of the U.S. dollar, because gold and silver are priced in U.S. dollars. Now, of course, they trade against a basket of other currencies too, and against a basket of other currencies, gold and silver, all-time highs, just like it was not too long ago against the U.S. dollar. So the U.S. dollar, because it's the global reserve currency, because it is still the best-looking girl at the dance, it's going to take a little bit longer to knock it down. But that, to me, is just a question of when. So I hope that sort of answers the question. It's not just the strength of the dollar, it's also the supply and demand dynamics, and it's also negative rates, real negative rates. And that is the fuel that is going to continue to run gold and silver prices higher over the long term. Because these policies that are being adopted by these central banks, by these governments, it's not going away anytime soon. They're trapped. They're done. They know it. They are not going to come out and say we made a mistake. They are not going to come out and say we got to stop all of this, that there are going to be negative consequences, that negative consequences have already taken place. They're not going to do it. Honesty and leadership is not an option for these people. And that should be perfectly apparent and evident to everybody who's paying attention. You're not going to hear it from politicians. You're not going to hear it from these central bankers, because the politicians are getting bailed out by these central bankers. And this is all these central bankers can do, because telling you the truth is not an option. So they are going to continue to do this. That's inflationary. That is good for gold and silver. It's not going to be good for the people. Not even close. And there are a lot of people who think that a lot of what's going on, economically speaking, is going to be more deflationary. In some areas, as I've stated many times before, that's possible. That's possible. But I am concerned with people. And I am concerned with what people actually need to spend their money on to live, and in some instances, depending on where you are, to survive. What's going on with the price of those goods and services? That's what I'm most concerned about. Because all of the global protests and riots that are taking place, okay, they are not taking place because the cost of living is so damn affordable. That's not why they're in the streets. They're in the streets because the cost of living is too high, because they can't tolerate a slight increase in a tax, a slight increase in the price of fuel, the slightest of increases in the cost to get on a subway or a train. Can't afford it. It's enough. Then you couple that with the social decay and the political decay that's taking place, the corruption, the nepotism, the fraud, the abuse, everything. So just pick your issue that becomes the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back and continue on. So it upsets me when people talk about deflation, and that's what's going to come because of all of the joblessness and this, that, and the other. It depends what goods you're talking about. If it's something that people are no longer buying, I don't care. I don't care. I care what it costs for people to live and for people to survive, and we ain't seen nothing yet. I think food prices are going to go through the roof over the coming year, year and a half. The fires that are taking place on the West Coast, God forbid there's another major fire in Australia. Remember that? Late last year, early this year, January, massive, basically historic fires taking place in Australia. That's how much stuff is taking place in 2020. Think about it if those happen again. The livestock that might kill off. The agricultural products that are grown in Australia. Just like the agricultural products that are grown in California. A lot of people don't realize how big of an agricultural state California is. It's huge. These are real issues in real time, and for the most part, they're not even being discussed. Unbelievable. And another thing to sort of address this question with regards to negative interest rates and gold prices, what have you, is something that I have been discussing here for, well, really almost going on 2 years now, since this podcast has been online, is the fact that once this everything bubble bursts, because we've never been in such an environment, it's anybody's guess how this unravels, how this implodes, how this explodes, and what type of correlations break down. So if something used to be positively correlated, maybe it's no longer positively correlated. Maybe it becomes negatively correlated, or maybe it becomes neutral. We've already started to see that. Now, that doesn't mean that that's how it's going to be from here on out, but at least in the short term, medium term, there can be some breakdowns. Because people will panic. Financial markets are basically non-existent. They're basically operated by the Federal Reserve, the ECB, the Bank of Japan, what have you. And they're going to lose control. There's no doubt in my mind whatsoever. You got a $27 trillion debt in this country. The United States posts its largest budget gap on record for fiscal year 2020, which we told you about for months. Now, the official comes in at 3.1, but we know that that's not the actual budget deficit that comes in at $4.2, almost $4.3 trillion. Now, I made the comment yesterday when we were discussing this that I wanted to know, when did the United States first have a $400 billion deficit? And what I really should have said was, when did we first get a $400 billion debt? But I wanted to go back and look for both. And the reason I come up with $400 billion, if you didn't listen to yesterday's podcast, was if you just take into consideration our federal tax revenue at about $3 trillion, and you subtract out Medicare and Medicaid spending, Social Security, defense spending, and our net interest payments on our debt, it already takes you to a deficit. Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, defense, interest payments. $400 billion deficit. You still got to take into consideration other transfer payments, the welfare state, the Justice Department, Agricultural Department, EPA, education, everything. Everything. So I went and I looked back. Okay, so there's where we get the $400 billion number from. You got to go back to the 1970s. The early 19th into the time of Nixon. That's how long it took us to get $400 billion as a total national debt, the accumulation of all annual deficits to get us to $400 billion. Now we're going to do that right out of the gate before we even get started. Amazing. Then if you want to look at the deficit, when did we first hit that milestone of $400 billion in the red? Well, you got to go back to about 2003, 2004. So there you have it. The financial situation of this country is a disgrace. Hasn't been discussed at all. And it's mind-boggling. It is just the screen that it must not be an issue and people can't figure this out for themselves. Unbelievable. So that's some of the debts and deficit picture. Initial claims, just as a reminder for those who might not have been on yesterday. Initial claims for the week ending, was it October 10th? I believe it was 898,000, higher than market expectations, which were supposed to come in around 820,000, 825,000. So these are staggering and heartbreaking numbers. And this is nowhere near a super duper V-shaped recovery, no matter what you're told by the president and the administration or any politician for that matter. It's just not the case. They're begging for more money. Members of Congress, some members of the White House, the Federal Reserve. The IMF, as we noted yesterday, spend. It's coming. Don't worry. Just a matter of time. And of course, we can't afford it. But that didn't stop them before with the Nobody Cares Act. They're going to continue with it down the pike again. Another basic question to ask Trump and Biden both, how is this going to benefit anybody, for that matter? They can't even ask them that. Now, on the election front, we have about 23.5 million votes. 23.5 million votes already being cast. That's about 16 or 17% of the 2016 voter turnout. So it's quite staggering. There's still obviously about two and a half weeks to go before Election Day. So as I stated yesterday, it's quite possible that we'll get somewhere close to about half of the votes being cast in early voting. So if that's the case, and maybe it'll be more, maybe less, but it's going to be a significant number regardless. I mean, 17%, as far as I'm concerned, is a big number. But if it should get as high as half, well, then it's going to be quite possible that we will know, even if it's a tight race, who won the presidency on the 3rd of November or the 4th of November, and we might not have to wait very long at all. There's a lot of people who were going to vote. At least this is some of the reporting that's been out there. People who are going to vote via mail, but then with all of the questioning about its validity and what's going to potentially happen, and Trump maybe making a big stink about it. Ah, screw it. Let me go and stand in line for several hours. And that's apparently what people are doing. They're taking advantage of early voting in person. If they have to wait, they have to wait. They're voting. It seems to be leaning more towards the Democrats in early voting. That's no surprise. That's what a lot of the analysts were predicting. Most of the vote for Trump would come during Election Day, so that's sort of fitting the pattern. But nonetheless, that might start to say, well, maybe there is a little bit more enthusiasm for Joe Biden, or perhaps this is, as I've been stating, just a straight referendum on Donald Trump. And so there's going to be enthusiasm for Donald Trump, and there's going to be enthusiasm against Donald Trump. And then when you look down ballot at some of these Senate races we've been discussing over the past couple of weeks, it is leaning more and more towards the Democrats gaining control of the Senate. And I really haven't seen much of anybody argue that the Republicans have any type of chance at regaining power in the House. Of course, anything can happen. But at this juncture, it appears that the Democrats will control both chambers of Congress. The Senate probably by a slim majority, but a majority nonetheless. The Republicans have pretty much stopped spending money in Colorado, so they're basically giving that up. The amount of money that has been raised in the state of Arizona for the Democratic candidate Mark Kelly, former astronaut, is staggering. and is almost outpacing Senator McSally almost by 2-1. And he has been leading in the polls consistently, so that's leaning heavily Democrat as well. Joni Ernst out of Iowa is in some trouble, so she might lose her seat. Tom Tillis of North Carolina is in a tight race. Some tight races in Georgia, and even in South Carolina with Senator Lindsey Graham, with Jamie Harrison, his opponent, record-breaking third-quarter money being raised for a Senate race. So this is far from over. And then you have Susan Collins up in Maine, Republican, who is in trouble and behind in the polls. So this is not looking good for the Republican Party. It's looking good for the Democratic Party. I'm not going to be surprised if there's a blue wave, to be perfectly honest with you. We saw a lot of momentum behind the Democrats in the midterm elections in 2018. Republicans should have learned their lesson. I think if they had just gone a little bit further in sort of reining in the president, it probably wouldn't be as bad. But anything can happen. Anything can happen. But what we're looking at is more of a blue wave than it is a red wave at this juncture. And it's still leaning heavy towards the Biden-Harris ticket. But Donald Trump is the incumbent. He has enthusiasm. He does have a path to victory. I think it's slim, but he pulled an inside straight in 2016. He can most definitely do it again. Net-net, to me, this doesn't make any difference. I am totally against the two-party system. I know some people, maybe through some of the comments that they make here, I want the audience to understand that this is not me, if you're offended, picking on Donald Trump or attacking him or Joe Biden or anybody, okay? I don't like the system, period, end. I don't like the Democratic Party. I don't like the Republican Party. I am sick and tired of them. And I give you reasons why every single day. I do not buy in to the divide and conquer tactics that they force feed us every day on Fox, on CNN, on MSNBC, and all the other outlets. Print, radio, what have you. I don't buy it. I just pay attention to see what they're saying and what they're not saying. I try to have independent thought. These people have led us to ruin. Economic ruin, financial ruin, political ruin, social ruin. Why should we support them? Because they tell you a few things that you like to hear? Is that it? Not good enough for me. Now, you're, of course, free to make up your mind. But these Republicans and these Democrats have not earned my vote, and they are not going to get it. I am not going to endorse more of this. I am not paying for this. I don't want to. Where's my representation? What is my recourse in all of this? At least I can vote. At least I can go vote for somebody who I believe in. Somebody who talks about the structural issues with the Libertarian candidate, Joe Jorgensen. Is she going to win? No, probably not. But voting isn't about winning and losing. It's about having your voice heard. It's about making a stand. And if we got to lose to make a point, well, then so be it. So be it. I'm not casting my vote for more of this nonsense. And the more of the nonsense is going to come, doesn't matter who's in the White House with this two-party system. It's not going to happen. Not even close. Trump's his own worst enemy. Can't get out of his own way. Democrats attack him. A lot of that has been ridiculous, no doubt about it. But Trump's the top dog. He's the top man. Can't get out of his own way. If he had done what I thought he should have done, and still think that he should have done, when he came into office, I have a mandate to drain the swamp. Here's what that means. We're going to fight the corruption, the nepotism, the fraud, the wasteful spending, try to cut out as many regulations as possible, try to cut taxes, try to cut spending, try to streamline as much of the federal government as we possibly can, put that great business mind he claims that he has to work to turn the federal government into a lean machine as much as possible. And in that, it's going to be painful. It's not going to be easy. There's a lot of money circulating. There's a lot of power. And those people who have that money and have that power are not going to want to give it up easily. So expect some volatility. Expect some sacrifices. Expect some hard days ahead. GDP might not be great. The stock market might not be great. But guess what? This is what we have to do. One administration after the next has put us in this position. But this is what we have to do as an American family. This is what we have to do. His base would have been behind him. People who say, you know what, I'm giving this guy a chance, would have been behind him. And people who said, well, you know what, I don't like him, but my goodness, maybe he is the real deal. Maybe at least would have respected it. But that's not what happened. The swamp has not been drained. The military-industrial complex has more money than it's ever received. Most of the regulation cuts have gone to the financial industry. Banks have never been bigger, never been more powerful. That is the swamp. Corporate bailouts, trillion-dollar deficits, expansion of employee government benefits. Had this been Barack Obama, Sean Hannity, and Rush Limbaugh, and Lou Dobbs would have had a heart attack. But it's their guy, it's perfectly okay. That's the problem. This continues. So all I'm saying is wake up. If you got to cast your vote for somebody who's going to lose, do it. But do it on principle. Jo Jorgensen deserves to be on that debate stage. She's on all 50 ballots. And if she was on that debate stage, she would just destroy both of these guys. No question about it. Wouldn't know how to handle her. Because she cuts through all the BS. Hits the structural issues that need to be addressed. But that is what it is. That's a weekly wrap-up. Catch you here next week. Enjoy your weekend. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.